You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to This Day in History with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history, going back to 1971 for the People's Republic of China being officially let into the United Nations, taking a sitting role, replacing the Republic of China, which had been, is currently and was then located in the island of Taiwan, which is over from the mainland. So this was after the country was sort of split between the two representatives, People's Republic versus Republic. Even though both sides had at one point fought with each other, or not against each other, against the Japanese invading forces in World War II.
A new Chinese army reorganizes to take the offensive. Trained by America's famous General Stilwell, veteran of the Burma campaign, and their own General Sun, the Chinese are preparing for the supreme test. Wounded, battle-scarred troops beg for another chance at the invader. And as rapidly as American doctors can pronounce them physically fit, they are sent to rejoin their regiments in the field. Medals are awarded United States officers for their gallant leadership and aid to China. And now, new equipment arrives from America. Trucks, big guns. Guns that are a match for any of Japan's. Expert artillery instructors explain the mechanism of the modern weapons. Weapons that have come by cargo planes and convoys, over mountain trails and continents, to help us staunch ally of the United Nations. On the rifle range, infantrymen train with guns the like of which they've never known before. For many, it's their first real instruction in marksmanship. No armchair commander, General Stilwell goes with them into the field. A checkup of targets reveals bullseye shooting. Shooting that may write new chapters in history when next they meet the Japs. For the first time in 6 long years, soldiers of China have waged war on the other side of grim mortars like these. Now China has the shells, the equipment, the communication lines, and the order is fire. Chinese troops in their own language, General Stilwell tells them they can count on full support from America. He said, "If we go back properly proportioned and properly equipped, we can throw the Japs out." Fighting words from a fighting American, and China's armies are ready to march again. At Chongqing, Wendell Willkie calls on Madame and General Chiang Kai-shek. As President Roosevelt's personal envoy, he goes to the front to see for himself China's new armies in the field. In the trenches, his guide is Captain Chiang, eldest son of the Generalissimo. They become warm friends. Handling a rifle is nothing new to Mr. Willkie. He used one in the last war. With General Stilwell, he meets Brigadier General Cheneau, leader of the famous Flying Tigers. And now, on a parade ground not far from the front, a full division of China's new mechanized forces passes in review. Lean, hard, well-trained men. Men who are determined to throw the Japanese out of China.
And after World War II, fighting would soon break out again between the Republican and Communist forces under Chairman Mao, who would eventually win in the late 1940s, driving the Republicans, or Nationalists, out to Taiwan.
With Communist forces threatening to overrun all China, with the national government's capital city of Nanking itself in peril, the evacuation of U.S. civilians has already begun. A boatload of American refugees is bid farewell by those left behind as it sails from Shanghai. Most aboard are the wives and children of Army personnel. But even as they leave, the 9th Division of U.S. Marines from Guam moves into Tsingtao. They're here to reinforce the Marine garrison already stationed at this port on the Yellow Sea. Tsing Tao is a nationalist-held pocket, completely surrounded by the communists. But so far, the Reds have made no effort to interfere with the city. The Marines' job is to protect American interests and American nationals who are already evacuating the port in a steady stream. Brigadier General Thomas, Marine Commander at Tsing Tao, meets with Vice Admiral Badger, West Pacific Commander. The Marines stand guard at a troubled spot in troubled China.
Yes, and of course, along with these American refugees, there would be plenty of ethnic Chinese refugees that would flee to various safe islands around the area, including Taiwan.
Tension is high on Formosa as ships of the American Navy bring thousands of Chinese refugees to the island. They come from the Tachin Islands. As a health measure, each is sprayed with DDT powder as he comes ashore. All this time, other ships are evacuating troops from the Tachins, leaving the deserted islands to the invading communists. Anything destroyable has been destroyed. The homes the people left, the shops and office buildings, even the crops in the fields. To the southwest in the Formosa Straits lies nationalist-held Quy Moi, an island outpost of vital importance to the defense of Formosa. America is not committed to shield Quy Moi from the Reds, who have vowed to capture it. Despite the fact that communist guns are only 5 miles away on the Chinese mainland, the people go about their business calmly. As Quy Moi watches and waits for its fate, comes the news that power in Russia has changed hands. Early in 1950, a scene was enacted in Moscow that left no doubt as to the close bonds between Russia and Red China. Mao Tse-tung, chairman of the Chinese People's Republic, met Mr. Molotov. Bulganin, Russia's new boss, looked on. Bulganin, when he took over Malenkov's role, said that China could count on help from their true friend, the Soviet Union. In 1948, the man who has recently been made Russia's defense minister, Marshal Zhukov, was decorated by Field Marshal Montgomery. Zhukov is backed by the Red Army and is one of their most popular leaders. Thus, the Russian army has a vast influence on the Soviets' policy. Will they use this power to force open conflict on Formosa? Or will Russia's new leaders cooperate with the Western Big Three, as in World War II, and ease tension in the Far East?
Intentions would ease somewhat on Formosa, which is the other name for Taiwan, which I probably should have said at the start of this. It also would become known then as the Republic of China, because you had the government in exile, which would remain very staunch supporters of the United States, and vice versa.
Chinese nationalist troops parading on Formosa before Chiang Kai-shek remind the world that although this offshore island is all the territory that remains to the man who once ruled the most populated nation on Earth, he has never given up hope of wresting China back from communist rule. Equipped with the latest American arms, the cream of his 600,000-strong army celebrate the 46th anniversary of the revolt which created the first Chinese Republic. Madame Chiang is one of the VIPs who applaud the climax of the parade, 10,000 soldiers double marching into position to hear their leader speak. Britain recognizes, without necessarily approving, China's communist regime. But America continues to recognize the nationalists exiled in Formosa as the legal government. Strengthened by US backing, Chiang tells his soldiers, "We are a dedicated people. We will return to our homes on the mainland."
That was part one of the Stay in History. Part two will be right back after a quick break.
The big dog of NZ Ambient, Rian Sheehan, is back with his first album in 5 years. The sublime, the cinematic, A Quiet Divide. If you'd like to win yourself a copy, along with a couple of tickets to see him perform it live, then grab your Simplicity B card and keep your radio tuned to 95BFM all this week. Rian Sheehan, A Quiet Divide. Out now wherever fine music is sold.
You were last night.
Craig, it's not...
Am I not deep enough? I can be emotional. I can break the fourth wall.
Wink.
I know we don't have the same history together.
But I love both of you.
No! Make a choice. Me or theatre.
Live for drama? Take some stage direction from our resident theatre expert. What's on and what's good on the Auckland stage? 9 a.m. every Friday on Breakfast. Stage direction with Johanna Cosgrove. Brought to you by the Vic Devonport.
Yes, but right now it's back to this day in history. When we left off, the Republic of China loyal forces had fled to Taiwan after the victory of the Communist Party. The island would then remain under their hands and is still ruled by the Kuomintang, which is the Nationalist Party, which I don't think has ever lost an election in the Republic of China, although they seem to have pulled more towards the mainland recently, so who knows what that means. But back in the 1950s, they certainly built themselves up, sort of in the way that South Korea was always posed as this is the alternative to the North. In a way that was then, of course, triumphantly proclaimed in newsreels like this one you're about to hear.
Free China looks back across 10 years on Taiwan and counts a decade of solid achievement since the communists overran the mainland and Chiang Kai-shek's beaten but still determined forces fled to sanctuary here. The then backward island was viewed by many as a place of dreary exile. But today, Taiwan's potential richness is being brought to fruition. Agricultural production, chiefly sugarcane and rice, has been increased manyfold. Possibly even more significant for the years ahead, dependence on these two prime crops has been lessened by diversification. The economic barometer, foreign exchange, has shown favorable readings in recent years. Aluminum plants that process Malayan bauxite. Steel is another growing export produced from native minerals. And to power new industry, Chiang Kai-shek's regime has harnessed the power of Formosa's mountain rivers. Formosa looks ahead to continued progress.
Despite this continued progress, Taiwan and the Republic of China would be shaken by the United Nations' acceptance of the People's Republic of China as the legitimate representative of the Chinese people on this day in history, 1971.
The Chinese people have always received the sympathy and support of the people of various countries in our struggle for independence and liberation over the past century and more. And in the course of our socialist revolution and socialist construction, we regard it as our bounding duty to give and support to the just struggles of the people of all countries.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.